Hello everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, your weekly guide to the weird and wild world of comics, manga, and all their related spin-offs. I'm Andrew, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Rob.
Hello!
And not as always, I'm not joined by my co-host, Mick. Ooh, that was a bad sentence.
It was some poor grammar there.
Anyway, Mick has a sore throat, he's not here.
Yes.
So, Rob, if you could just occasionally yell about how none of these newfangled comics make sense, I think we'll be able to make do.
I don't know. I don't have my rocking chair and my shotgun.
You're right, so you can't be old man comics.
Exactly.
Anyway, how are you today, Rob?
Feeling good.
Bum. Da bum. Da bum. Da 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 da. Anyway, I'm also good. I'm excited to be talking about today's topic.
Yes, yes.
Which is the fact that James Gunn is back, baby.
Is he?
He is indeed, after being fired as the director for Guardians of the Galaxy 3 following basically some old jokes he made on Twitter getting rehashed. Marvel have decided to do a U-turn on that decision and rehire him.
Which is basically what we all predicted.
Yeah, but it just took a bit longer than we were expecting.
Well, they had to let kind of the dust settle and the Mueller inquiry to gain more traction, more of Donald Trump's political helpers to be charged with various crimes and actually found guilty of various crimes. And then, you know, the pressure's off. Marvel can basically say, yeah, come on back.
Yeah, basically just say, well, compared to the garbage fire of the rest of the country, this is nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, but no, I think in reality, I probably wouldn't give Marvel too much credit. I think what's happened is they've fired him, but then they've realised that, like, no other director wants to come within, like, 10 yards of the project.
Yeah, because...
And the cast are all kind of rebelling, and it's like, nah, we don't want all this bad publicity.
Yeah, that is the more likely story. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, no matter which director they get on board, the cast are not going to do what they say.
Yeah, I agree.
Especially the likes of Chris Pratt. I mean, if ever there was a boy most likely to cause trouble...
He's probably setting bags of poo on fire and sending them on prospective director's doorsteps, isn't he?
He was on Graham Norton and he was telling a story about the time he got naked on the set of Parks and Recreation.
Was this one of the times he was supposed to be naked or another time?
He was basically supposed to appear at the front door naked, but... He was supposed to have one of those flesh-coloured thongs on, right? But what he did, he decided against wearing anything. And he got a really nasty letter from the production company saying, do not do this again.
Oh, method acting. Anyway.
Yeah.
So that, and also the wild fact that, like, James Gunn is now going to be the director of both Suicide Squad 2 and Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Yep.
Finally happened, we're living in the singularity. I thought, since Guardians 3 is back on track, and that is supposed to be kind of the conclusion of James Gunn's kind of trilogy of films.
Yeah.
We could maybe take a look at some of the Guardians of the Galaxy comics.
Yes.
Maybe get some hints on characters who might show up in maybe future directions the franchise might go in.
Absolutely.
So, we're not actually going to start at the beginning, though.
No, because then you're talking about going back to, like, 1969, was it?
Yep, which we might swing by there eventually. But no, one of the interesting things about the Guardians of the Galaxy is there's kind of been, I would say, three main iterations of the team.
Yeah.
The original one, the Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning team, and kind of this more modern team. So I think we're going to start with the modern team, just kind of take a quick look at them, because basically this is the group that's been running from about 2014, written by Brian Michael Bendis.
Yeah.
And I think if you've seen the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, you're very familiar with the situation of the team. Because it has just been kind of Star-Lord, Gamora, Rocket, Groot, and Drax.
Yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah, and very much, like, more than any other Marvel franchise, I think you can tell that the Guardians have been hit by the MCU like a steam train.
Yeah, I mean, there's only Rocket left, isn't there?
Oh, no, I just meant in terms of the comic characters becoming a lot more like the movie characters.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, also, they're all dead in the MCU at the moment.
Yeah, except for Rocket, and that's, wow. But, you know, I was thinking, was it the Reavers or something like that?
Oh, yeah, the Ravagers.
The Ravagers, that's it. See, I'd love to see a Ravagers movie.
See, I reckon they're going to show up at some point, but I reckon by the time Guardians 3 rolls around, most of, if not all, the original team are just going to be back to life.
Yeah.
But anyway, just to keep us on where I wanted to be.
Yeah, sorry.
So, the one team, we're mostly going to skip past them because, like I said, most people are probably quite familiar with them anyway. But there are a couple of interesting points I wanted to bring up just for many for people who aren't that familiar, maybe haven't read the comics that much.
Yeah.
First of all, is an interesting direction that they could go in. Because if you look at some of the characters who have joined the team recently, we've had like Iron Man, Captain Marvel, Ant-Man's been on the team for a while.
Yep.
I think also Angela, who's Thor's sister. So we could see maybe in the future kind of characters from other films joining the Guardians.
It's possible. The one most likely to join the Guardians, I reckon, is probably Thor.
Yeah, maybe Thor. I was even thinking, like, maybe you could put Valkyrie on the team.
You could, but I think Thor first, and then Valkyrie may take his place. But I think Thor, because the Guardians are the ones who helped him with the Stormbreaker.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like, especially after Infinity War, you're now at a point where it could be easier to sort of swap people in and out of the teams.
Yeah.
Because they're all birds now.
Yep.
And then the other thing, that'd be interesting to talk about, is the fact that some of the Guardians have very different comic origins to how they've been in the film.
Yes.
And those origins are wild.
Yes.
So I feel like Star-Lord, Gamora, Rocket Raccoon, they're most the same.
Yep.
Groot, though. Groot is actually Groot the Second.
Yep.
Because the original Groot appeared in Tales to Astonish issue 13 from 1960.
Wasn't he one of the original Marvel monsters?
Yeah, he was. He was a tree monster who tried to, take over the Earth until some dude, unleashed a bunch of termites on him and they ate him to death. What do you think of being eaten to death by termites, Rob?
I don't think it would be pleasant. I've been bitten by insects before, and it was never pleasant.
I guess it just depends what you're into, doesn't it?
Well, I'm not really into that much biting. Unless it's me doing the biting, in which case, it's all fair.
In which case, we should definitely move on to Drax the Destroyer, then.
Yes, because he is a bitey man.
He is a bitey man. Emphasis on the man.
Yes.
Because, Marvel Comics Drax the Destroyer, not an alien. He is a man called Arthur Sampson Douglas.
Yes, he is.
Who was driving home with his family one time when he accidentally came across Thanos' spaceship. So Thanos blew him up. And then his soul got rescued by Mentor, yep. Thanos' daddy.
Yep.
And he put him in a big old green monster body.
This is true.
Also, back then in the 70s, he had a purple cape. I want Drax to have a purple cape again.
Yeah. The other thing about the old Drax as well, the old 70s Drax, because during the 90s, they turned Drax into basically Space Hulk.
Yeah, that was weird, because at that time, they'd made Hulk smart.
Yeah, and turned Drax dumb. I was like, this is not normal. One of the key moments for Drax, I remember, is always the conversation he has with Captain Marvel in The Death of Captain Marvel, where he says, "I've been where you're going. It's nothing to be afraid of." Because he's referring to the fact that...
rewritten to Drax think death dumb.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. That's basically what they reduced him to.
Oh, fun fact. Looking through Drax's power list, he has cosmic awareness.
Yep.
Cosmic awareness. Now it's Andrew's pet peeve corner.
Why?
Freaking every space character has cosmic awareness, Rob. What does it even mean?
It means they're aware of the cosmic.
I'm aware of the cosmic. I can look up at the sky and go, yes, space exists. But maybe I'm not going to go and try and stab aliens in the face.
No, maybe it's just like they've got a really good three-dimensional sense of direction.
But they can just put, Neptune, it's that way.
How can you tell? Well, it's that big blue planet over there. You know, the one that's like filling up half the sky.
Anyway, luckily this is the last time we'll ever have to talk about vaguely defined space powers.
See, I always thought it was like...
It wasn't.
I always thought cosmic awareness was, you know, that party trick where you basically, somebody downs like several shots and then you spin them around and then they basically point north all the time.
Yes, that's exactly what Captain Marvel and Drax the Destroyer could do.
You don't know what they get up to in their downtime.
Actually, to be fair, I guess based on the Captain Marvel comics, the idea that Marvel was just smashing those recreationals probably fits in very well.
Exactly. I mean, he was a proper old-school warrior, wasn't he? I fight hard, I play hard, I drink hard.
Turns out Thanos was actually just a California raisin the entire time. So that, like, all those old stories are just the Avengers whispering, he's like the most powerful person in existence. We can't tell him it's just a raisin. We have to play along.
Oh, anyway, back to the Guardians.
Yep, so we are going to rewind it a bit to 2008.
Before we rewind it, could I just say this? Because I really want to say this out loud, just so it's there.
I'm going to regret this, but I'll allow it.
Gamora's full name.
Do you want me to have a crack at saying
it? Go on, you try.
So, Gamora, a.k.a. Gamora Zen Huberi Bentayga. Of the Zen Huberians.
See, is it Huberi or is it Wuberi? With the silent.
Could it also be Wuberi? you've shaken me to the core with this revelation.
Yeah, anyway, you were saying the 2008 Titans.
Or even the 2008 Guardians of the Galaxy.
Sorry, Guardians of the Galaxy, sorry.
Yeah, so this was basically. The original Guardians of the Galaxy, they were. In kind of an alternate future. But this was the first team kind of in the main Marvel universe to be called the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
And basically this was at the end, kind of 2007, 2008, Marvel were big into their cosmic stuff.
Yes, they were. I mean, they kind of regressed because it was like they'd gone back 10 years to the end of the 90s when they were big in their cosmic stuff again.
Yeah, I mean, like a lot of things, it just happens in cycles, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah, basically there was a big event called Annihilation, where a Nihilist had a bunch of bugs, tried to take over the universe, Ultron showed up for a bit, and at the end of that, Star-Lord basically decided what he needed was a preemptive strike force to stop things like this happening again.
Okay.
Which, I mean, I think nicely underlines my point of, these characters were very different before the movie came out.
Yes, they were.
Yeah, so he basically assembled a bunch of characters to act as the Guardians of the Galaxy. I think this was the team that originally the movie took kind of quite a bit of inspiration from. So that's where we get things like the idea of Nowhere, you know, the giant celestial's head.
Yeah.
That's basically where they had their base of operations.
So who was in this team? Obviously, Rocket... Star-Lord, Groot, Drax, Mantis?
Yeah, Mantis. She was kind of like the mission control. Actually, at the end of the series, it was revealed that... Or maybe it was even partway through. That basically no one had joined the Guardians of the Galaxy of their own free will. So, like, Star-Lord had actually got Mantis to just mind-control everyone into joining up.
So, what about the rest of the team? Because I know there was more. I remember this. Adam Warlock was in there, wasn't he?
Yeah, we had quite a few. We'll get to Adam Warlock because some of the weird mix of characters, like those six were kind of the core cast.
Hmm.
We also had Jack Flagg.
And what?
Yeah, Jack Flagg, who was like one of Captain America's friends. He went to space for a bit. we had Bug of the Micronauts, who I think maybe canonically didn't join them now.
Hang on, Bug of the Micronauts was part of the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, because for a long while Marvel had the rights to the Micronauts before they gave them away to, was it Boom Studios?
Yeah, which I think was a great idea, by the way.
Yeah, but it's like, it's one of those weird things now how, like, I guess ROM Space Knight technically isn't canon anymore.
Well, I don't know. See, that's the thing. The Galadorians, the Space Knights, are technically still canon because of the Space Knight name, the Space Knight brand. So I don't know.
Anyway, basically, if you have all these issues, what you need to do is go back to all of them with a black marker and just scribble out Bug. It doesn't exist now.
Yeah.
We also had, everyone's favourite member of the team, Cosmo the Space Dog.
Yes, because he is one of the best.
Yes. He is like a cosmonaut dog who develops psychic powers in his spacecraft and now runs nowhere. He's, if you remember, he's technically shown up in the films as a cameo.
Yep.
So fingers crossed in 3, like he actually gets a proper role.
I hope he does.
Yep. And now we move on to the characters who I think are genuinely quite interesting and might have a chance of showing up in the films.
Okay.
So first up, as you've already mentioned, Adam Warlock.
Yeah.
He is, he's like an artificial human who was made in like a cocoon and then powered by the soul gem.
Wasn't he created to be the perfect being?
He was created to be the perfect being, and do you know what being the perfect being entails? It's vaguely defined space powers.
Yes.
Can he fly? Yes, he can. Can he lift things good? Probably. Does he fire laser blasts? Yep. Is he psychic? Maybe. Magic? Sure.
Do you know the funny thing about Adam Warlock, though? The thing that I always found amusing about him was whenever I read a comic involving Adam Warlock, it seemed as though the writers really couldn't figure out what they were supposed to do with him, because he could punch things, but he preferred not to.
Yeah. Basically, there's two types of Adam Warlock stories. There's Adam Warlock stories written by most writers where he just kind of hangs around helping in ways that aren't well defined.
Yeah.
Or there's stories written by Jim Starlin in which he's the best at everything and single-handedly saves the day every time.
Yeah. See, I have this idea for Adam Warlock. He is Marvel's exposition monster. He's basically there to explain everything that happens.
Pretty much. But I think we better get excited about Adam Warlock, because he is the character with the most chance of showing up in the third movie.
See, you say that, but
first of all, he has technically shown up already in the second movie.
Yeah, I know. I know he has. And yeah, okay, he's the most likely, but what about Moondragon?
Well, I was going to be, but James Gunn has said he would very much like to have Adam Warlock in the next film.
Yes. Yes, he has.
So yeah, Moondragon is also in, like, I would definitely put her down as 99% certain she's going to show up.
I've always been confused by Moondragon, by exactly what is she?
Okay. Moondragon is a human woman called Heather Douglas. Wait a minute, does that last name sound familiar? So anyway, Heather was in the back of her parents' car when they came across Thanos, and so he blew them all up. But luckily, she was saved by Thanos' daddy, Mentor. Doesn't this sound awfully familiar?
Yeah.
And she was taken to the world of Titan, where she was taught space karate.
That was the thing. Because I always considered Heather Douglas to be like Space Iron Fist.
I mean, she basically is. She hasn't done more, like, trying to link those two together.
See, I would.
Because, like, not only that, she also has telepathic abilities.
Yeah.
That she got from a creature known as the Dragon of the Moon.
Exactly.
Anyway, so like, those two would work really. She also dresses all in green.
Yeah.
Come on, what are you doing, Marvel?
We've just hit the perfect combination. Iron Fist and Moondragon. just off having a great adventure. Maybe they have some romance, maybe they fall in love, maybe they get married.
Maybe they don't, and Heather decides to start going by her other code name again, which is... Are you ready for this, Rob?
Go on, then.
So when Moondragon first appeared in Iron Man Volume 1, Issue 54, in January 1973, she was pretending to be a villain to her because she thought all of Earth was under Thanos' control. And the name she went by was Madam Mac Evil.
Did she adopt a child and call him Evil Knievel?
That's not how names work, Rob. Anyway, yeah. But not only is Moondragon kind of one of the core guardians of the galaxy, she is also, as I say hinted at, basically stated already, Drax's daughter.
Yes. Yes, she is.
And then finally, the other mainstay of the current Guardians.
See, this one is the one that I've been waiting for because this links directly to the main Guardians that I know.
See, no, I think you're thinking of someone else.
No.
I was going to say Phyla Vell.
Really?
A.K.A. Captain Marvel, A.K.A. Quasar, A.K.A. Marta.
Oh, no, not her. Well, actually, she does kind of link to the comics that I read during the 90s. But that was Warren... No, was it Warren? Or was it Wendell, wasn't it?
Yeah, Wendell Vaughn, other Quasar.
Yeah, she's not him, which is all good. But she's still Quasar, which is kind of lame.
Yeah, basically, she was Quasar after Quasar died.
Yeah.
A bit. But then he got better, and then he maybe died. Quasar dies a lot because he's a nerd.
That's because he's Quasar.
And he's a nerd with, guess what?
Photon powers!
And what's photon code for? Yes, vaguely ill-defined space powers.
Yep. Something to do with light.
Anyway, but Phyla Vell is actually quite interesting.
Yep.
Because she is the original Captain Marvel's daughter.
Yes, yes she is. Yes she is.
That's why I think having her on the team would be an interesting way to link to the Captain Marvel films. And also, more importantly, she is Moondragon's girlfriend.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, having both of them on the team would mean we finally have, like, an openly gay couple in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yep.
Which, again, oh my god, Marvel, it's been, like, 21 films.
Yeah, I know.
It's not a great look.
But you missed one. You missed one.
I mean, I've probably missed a couple.
No, you missed...
The most important ones who I don't care... I mean, I say the ones who I don't care about. Cards on the table... I'm not a huge Guardians of the Galaxy fan.
I know, but the one who links to the Guardians that I know. Major Victory. Vance Astro.
In my defense, James Gunn has like pretty much categorically stated that Vance Astro is not going to be showing up.
No, I know he's not going to be showing up. I'm saying that from the 2008-2009 run of Guardians, he was made one of the Guardians, and he was one of the Guardians of the Galaxy in the 90s. When they were basically more of a rebel force, it was more along the lines of what they originally created back in 1969.
Yeah, I mean, I think that basically does take us on to the original Guardians of the Galaxy, doesn't it?
Well, via the 90s Guardians of the Galaxy, I suppose. When you had...
Yeah, well, I guess we're kind of like the same team, but sort of more expanded, weren't they?
Yeah, the 90s Guardians of the Galaxy, the Badoon had basically taken over the solar system. And you had Vance Astro and Charlie 27, Martin X, Yondu, Starhawk.
Oh, we'll get it.
Yeah.
Okay, so to explain things, original Guardians of the Galaxy, set in an alternate future, first appeared Marvel Superheroes issue 18, 1969. So this followed Vance Astro, who was an Earth astronaut. And also a member of the new Warriors called Justice Now, which is weird split timelines. Anyway, Vance, he was sent off to space. This is the bit I do actually quite like about the original Guardians. He went off to space to go to Alpha Centauri, which is the galaxy next to us.
Yeah.
But it was a mission that would take like 1,000 years. And so he was put in suspended animation. Only once he got to Alpha Centauri, he found... because it was 1,000 years, and in that 1,000 years, humanity had discovered faster than light travel.
Yep.
And so it had already arrived there, making his entire mission pointless.
Yep. And so he'd basically sacrificed his entire life for nothing.
Yeah. And so instead he ended up forming this kind of rebel group with a bunch of characters who were kind of the last of each of their respective species.
Well, the thing is, they were all human. The whole thing about
oh, them, yeah, they were like humans who had colonized other planets.
And they'd basically been genetically altered to fit those planets. So Charlie 27 came from Jupiter, and because of the mass and the gravity of Jupiter, he was a lot heavier, but also very, very strong. Martin X was, I think he was from, I can't remember, but he was
Pluto,
basically...
Pluto, I think?
Was it Pluto? But he was basically made of, like, crystal. Yondu wasn't human. Yondu,
yeah, no, he was a native of Alpha Centauri.
Yeah. Starhawk and Alita, we'll get to those in a second. That's complicated.
Do we have to get to Starhawk?
Nikki was also there. Nikki, who was, I think she was from Mercury, wasn't she?
Yeah. Her superpower is that she's on fire.
Yeah. Then you had Replica, who, I can't remember Replica. Talon was a bit of an odd one, because Talon in that timeline eventually becomes the Sorcerer Supreme. He's actually the disciple of Stephen Strange, who is the current Ancient One.
Wait, are you? No, that's Krugar, isn't it? The weird, like, snake dude.
No. In that timeline, it's Talon.
Ah. So Krugar's like the wizardy snake dude who showed up in the films.
Yeah. In the 90s Guardians, anyway, it's actually Talon, because when they're doing the whole thing with the Silver Surfer, the coming of the Keeper, where the Silver Surfer has basically learned, he's had his power cosmic taken away from him, but then he's taken outside of the universe by a Rebel Watcher and... yeah, it's comics. 90s comics were weird. We've established this already.
Yeah.
But anyway, they're fighting against...
We're going to have to say it, aren't we? We're going to have to talk about Starhawk.
Oh, we will, but in a second. They're fighting against Galactus, and he uses the Crimson Bands of Sidorak, but they go out of control. And so Stephen Strange, the Ancient One, basically has to turn up, undo the spell, and forces Talon to apologize to Galactus in the middle of a fight.
Talon, you dumb nerd.
Then you had Yellowjacket.
Okay, yeah, I will defer to your knowledge then, because you've read more of this series than I have.
Then you had Yellowjacket, who basically hitched a ride from the actual official Marvel 90s timeline into the Guardians timeline. I think it was the female Yellowjacket.
Yeah, it was Rita...
Damara or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Not Hank Pym, basically.
Yeah. And then you had, there was a final one who joined, but I can't remember. What name is Gina?
Oh, my God. I've been scrolling down and I found who else joined.
Gina something, wasn't it?
Oh, no, I was thinking of Simon Williams.
Oh, yeah. We
who in this world went by Hollywood Man of Wonder.
Yeah.
This is, of course, Wonder Man, the worst Avenger.
Yes, he is. We're not talking about him. But now we come to... Now we come to Starhawk and Alita. We have to. Okay. See, this is the thing, right? Starhawk is his full name is Stakar of the House of Ogod, which is basically what people who are in the know say whenever someone mentions him. Oh God, no. And
Stakar. Oh God.
This is one of the most bizarre Marvel characters that I've found. His destiny is to eventually re-inhabit his infant body and relive his life over and over again.
Yep, and his life is a time loop.
Yeah, and because of that, he's got the name. He ended up calling himself The One Who Knows.
Well, clearly someone's watched a bit too much Breaking Bad.
See, this is the thing. Starhawk's parents...
I've read this and I know who Starhawk's real dad is. Yeah. And it makes me mad.
I know. Starhawk's parents are the cosmic entity known as Kismet and Wendell Vaughn.
Quasar! Why you got to make everything so confusing?
Yeah, but the thing is...
Stupid star brand on your butt and your energy woobly manipulations, and we're going to do a race and maybe one of the contestants is Barry Allen, but don't tell DC. Shh!
The thing is, Starhawk is kind of half-human, half-artificial being, but...
Half-magic hawk.
Yeah, half-magic hawk. He's basically... He's basically a lot of halves thrown into one. It's like they basically had like a ball of ideas. They grabbed a handful of the ideas, threw them on the table and said, that's our new character. They didn't even look at the ideas they threw down.
Oh, also half his own wife.
Yes, half his own wife.
Actually, no, it's half his own ex-wife, just to be super awkward.
Yeah, half his own ex-wife, who, it gets a little bit hillbilly here. She's also kind of his sister.
Oh, good, I didn't know that detail.
If I remember rightly, during one of the Guardians comics I've got, she refers to Starhawk as brother.
Starhawk, he made it worse.
But here's where it gets even more complicated. Starhawk is one of the most trusted friends of Major Victory, of Vance Astro. Whereas Starhawk's ex-wife slash possible sister is also... the girlfriend of Vance Astro. Now, Starhawk and Alita inhabit the same body.
It's... it's just fine. You know, in a relationship between three consenting adults, two of which share the same body...
This is one of the reasons why, when on the last Captain Marvel, when we were talking about love triangles, I was kind of saying... the whole thing with Yon-Rogg and Mar-Vell and Una wasn't really a love triangle, mainly because this is what I think a love triangle looks like in Marvel
this
comics.
This is a love triangle, but also one of the sides of the triangle has just collapsed.
Exactly.
It's a love ellipsis is what it is. I hate Starhawk.
You hate Starhawk. Imagine how I felt when I first read those bits, when Starhawk first turns into Alita, and I'm like, hang on, what?
I'm glad that in the movies he's basically just like replacement Vance Astro, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
But with neat armbands.
Oh. Hang on, wasn't Starhawk Stallone's character?
Yep, that was Stallone.
Do you think anyone told Stallone about Starhawk? About what?
Definitely not. I think if they had, he would not be in that.
Or at least, not being called Starhawk. He's like, I'm a what?
No, I think what would have happened is someone would have read all this out to him, and he would have just stood up and left, like, without saying a word, just gone.
Oh, anyway, leaving them to one side, let's leave Starhawk there.
Please, yes, lad. So, Rob, after having gone through all of this. Have you got any ideas about what Guardians of the Galaxy 3 might be about?
Like you, I reckon it'll be set after Avengers Endgame. I reckon the Guardians will be back, possibly minus Gamora.
Yeah, that was my main thought. Is that if any of them are going to be dead, it's going to be Gamora.
Yeah, I think possibly minus Gamora. And I think because Gamora's gone, they'll need somebody who's physically good at combat, which opens the door to Moondragon.
Yeah, she can fill that niche of being kind of the slightly more serious one, can't she?
Yeah. Well, not only that, if they're going to stick with Moondragon being Drax's daughter, because Drax did have a family in this, and his family was killed by Thanos. He's talked about his daughter. So what if, just like in the comics, his daughter was actually saved by somebody else? Maybe not Mentor, maybe somebody else. So his daughter was saved and trained in martial arts, and then... on their adventure, they meet his daughter.
Oh, what if his daughter was saved by Stakar? And that's how you link in the original Guardians.
That's possible, yeah. That is possible.
Yeah, see, that works. I think design-wise, you can just do... I mean, you can still make a bald-headed woman, just she's green.
Well, yeah. I mean, you got Nebula. She's blue.
Yeah, exactly. Be a nice colour contrast.
So, yeah.
Actually, that being said...
Yeah.
But I also have a suspicion that Nebula might die in Endgame.
See, I don't know. If they're going to stick with any part of the Infinity Gauntlet story, the original one. I reckon Nebula will get her hands on the Infinity Gauntlet.
See, I know, because I feel like in the film she's just a bit too minor of a character to like suddenly become the main villain.
But that was
the... I'm suspecting more like she'll maybe sacrifice herself to give everyone else a shot at taking Thanos down.
Possibly, that is possible, but if you look at the comics, even in the comics, she was too minor a character, but she still got her hands on the Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah, because they're like, maybe...
Which is...
Something will happen to her, probably.
That's what I think. I think if they're gonna do anything, it'll be Nebula who gets her hands on the Infinity Gauntlet. And, see, Nebula's only motivated by one thing. When you look at it, across all of the stories, Nebula has only ever been motivated by one thing, and that's her sister.
Yeah, and I figure with Gamora dead, she's going to be wanting some payback.
Well, not just payback. She's going to be thinking the Gauntlet is the only way to bring Gamora back to life. Because at the end of the day, she's just started rebuilding a relationship with her sister.
Yeah, I could see that of maybe like Nebula saying, okay, great job, everyone, we've taken down Thanos, but I do need to bring my sister back, so I'm going to betray y'all. Sorry.
Yeah. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I see what you mean. Also, along that lines, thought I had is I reckon if Adam Warlock is in Guardians 3, then he could potentially use his space magic to bring Gamora back.
Possibly, yeah. Or at least allow them to communicate with her.
Yeah, maybe have some kind of... For the idea of you, I'd like her to properly come back, because I feel like she got kind of shortchanged in Infinity War quite a bit.
Yeah, so do I. But it was a brilliant part played by Zoe Saldana.
It was indeed. I'd like to see more of her. I reckon she comes back and then her and Peter Quill will have to make kissy faces or something.
Yeah, I reckon for Guardians 3, I am hoping that they'll do the Moondragon story that we've talked about just now. I'm hoping that they'll basically have... It'll basically be just... If they bring all the Guardians back, minus Gamora, and they'll basically be doing something, and then they'll run into a young lass who looks like Drax, but basically kicks their asses. And
yeah, I'm thinking maybe she starts off working for the bad guys or something,
yeah.
But then halfway through realises, oh no, I'm on the wrong team, I'm going to switch sides.
Not only that, Drax, when he meets her, he recognises her straight away, and so when she's punching him, he's standing there in the best Drax way. You know, he's taking all the punches, totally unmoving, because it's not having an effect on him, and he's just staring at her in shock. And then after the fight, after she runs off, Drax is just staring.
Actually, I can see that as a fun bit where, like, she probably clocks him across the face and just, like, he whips his head back to the same shocked expression.
Yeah. And then everyone out, you know, Drax is like that for, like, 10 minutes. Because we know
alternatively, what if Drax isn't in the film at all, except during the final fight he suddenly bursts out and yells, I was invisible the entire time,
as he finished his bag of crisps.
Yeah.
It's taken him this long,
because that's I think that might be one of my favourite moments in Infinity War. I've held my breathing to master the art of invisibility. Chomp.
Yes. Oh, right. On that note, shall we take a break?
Yeah, let's do it.
Cartoons, they're not just for kids anymore, except the ones that are actually for kids, they're for kids. If you liked that, then tune in to Keyframe for more scintillating insights about the world of animation. Part of the Geek Show's podcast network, we'll tell you whether it's as good as Ghibli or just plain giblets.
And welcome back to the show. Now we're going to be talking about what we've been reading. So, Rob, that question what I just asked.
I have been reading X-Men Extermination, because it's got an X in. You see what they did there?
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Now, this collects Extermination numbers 1 to 5, and material from X-Men Gold, number 27, X-Men Blue, number 27, X-Men Red, number 5, Astonishing X-Men number 13 and Cable number 159. And it's written by Ed Brisson and illustrated by Pepe Larraz with Ario Anindito and Oscar Basaldúa. So, where to begin with this? please tell me where to begin with this.
Okay, so a while ago, versions of the original X-Men, Cyclops, Jean Grey, Beast, Angel, and Iceman, they got brought to the future by Beast, basically to kind of try and fix all the mistakes that all the versions had made. But then they get stuck in the future, and it was fine for a while, but then suddenly it wasn't.
Yeah, because you had Captain Ahab, not the one from Moby Dick, but some kind of space Captain Ahab, who likes turning people into gimps.
Yeah, that's a fairly accurate summary of Ahab.
Especially mutants. He says death to mutants, but he doesn't kill them, he turns them into gimps. Or hounds, as he calls them. He's hunting mutants, especially Cyclops, for some reason. Meanwhile, Cable is trying to save the timeline.
Yeah, actually, to jump in, because I think the series never really explains it that well. But basically, Ahab and Cable are kind of in a race, because Ahab knows if he kills any of the original five X-Men, then they can't go back in time, and a bad future happens where they all die.
Yeah, and that's the future that Cable is trying to prevent. But it's just the most convoluted, bizarre, messed up story. You have Cyclops and Bloodstorm. Bloodstorm gets killed by Ahab. Then you have old Cable, or the Cable that we all know, and he's trying to save Bobby, but then you have him being killed, and it turns out he's killed by his younger self.
Which, the people on the internet have given young Cable possibly my favourite nickname.
What?
They call him Dial-Up. Which is very good.
That is the best. Thank you, folks on the internet. That is the best name for young Cable.
Sometimes you're all right. And
this is the thing. I have absolutely no idea what's going on. I mean, there's two kids who speak in French and can apparently turn people into gimps for Ahab.
No, they're new. You don't need to know who they are.
Yeah, and Logan has a healing factor that can reject almost anything, right?
Yeah, but that's young Logan. This is old Logan.
Old Logan.
Yeah, you get to a certain age, healing factor isn't what it was.
You need some little blue pills, do you?
That's good. Well, as Garth Marenghi says, subtlety is for cowards.
And then throw into the mix the fact that X-Force, led by Domino, are out to get young Cable because he killed old Cable.
Yeah, which is murder even though he says it isn't.
Yeah, and all of this because things.
Because they've got to save the timeline, Rob.
Yeah, the timeline from who?
From the bad that will happen if the kids don't go back.
Well, that's the thing, because the bad is going to happen because Ahab kills one of them, doesn't he?
Or does he?
Well, no, he doesn't.
You'd crack at the awkward silence.
Yeah, I couldn't hold it. But this is the thing, it's just, okay, I know what's going on, but I don't know what's going on. And why does Ahab's ship look like Yamato?
I mean, there's a lot I don't like about Extermination, but I will defend Ahab's giant floating, like, old-timey whaling ship.
But that's what I mean, it looks like Yamato. You know, space battleship Yamato.
Yeah, I'm kind of vaguely aware of it. But yeah, it's because it looks cool, Rob, that's why.
Stealing ideas. But yeah, X-Men Extermination is one of those, it's a bit like you with Infinity Wars and Mick with, like, every comic, or every modern comic.
You know parental guidance stickers?
Yes.
I think comics need to start having them for just like, hey, don't read this if you haven't been keeping up with like the last 3 years of X-Men history.
Well, I read like the first 5 issues of X-Men Gold and then the first couple of issues of X-Men Blue and then stopped.
Because they were bad.
Yeah. And so I'm going into this and I'm going, okay. So what happened in the intervening part?
Not much, basically. Like, Yeah, I think the thing I also need to get across is a lot of this story has just come up at the start of Extermination, just and go, oh, by the way, these things.
Yeah, that's literally all it does. The beginning of Extermination, the very beginning, it just says, genetically gifted with uncanny abilities, the whole mutant spiel, yeah? It says, believing the X-Men had lost their way, Beast, a.k.a. Hank McCoy, used time travel technology to bring his younger self and the other first five students of Charles Xavier forward in time, which is basically what you explained. And that's it.
Yeah, I feel. I think the key thing you're missing is apparently X-Men Blue had a bit of a backup feature where it was basically showing this kind of horrible future where all the X-Men died, with the idea being it saying, you know, the five teens have to travel back in time to stop that from happening. For reasons...
What is this, an episode of Captain Planet?
I mean, it has about as much logic as one. There's also, like, something really gross and bad that happens in Extermination that I feel like they did not think through. Well, it's just the fact that, well, to spoil the ending, because this is a bad series, don't bother reading it. Bobby Drake is one of the X-Men who has to go back.
Yeah.
Only the thing is, coming to the future. Oh, because also they wipe their memories, so they don't remember this happening until like their adult selves are past this story, if that makes sense.
Yep.
But the problem is, when he came to the future, that was when Bobby Drake found out he was gay. So they're just opening up that closet and shoving him right back in.
Yep.
And he has to live like a lot of his teen and early adult life completely repressed. And that's maybe not super cool, Marvel.
Yeah. See, when I was reading it, I didn't pick up on that, I'll be honest. And the
main I'll admit, full disclosure, I only know this because it's a point that someone else brought up and I went, ooh, yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, I spent most of my time trying to figure out what the hell was going on.
Yeah, that's also fair enough, because it's a confusing mess.
Anyway, Andrew, please take over.
Yeah, I've been having more fun. I've been reading, continuing with my Infinity Wars stuff, been reading Infinity Warps 2-in-1.
Which is quite literal.
Yeah, so this collects Soldier Supreme issues 1 and 2, Iron Hammer issues 1 and 2, Arachnite issues 1 and 2, Weapon Hex issues 1 and 2, Ghost Panther issues 1 and 2, and Infinity Warps issue 1 and 2. So this is basically the bit in Infinity Wars where kind of all of Earth got sort of merged together to make basically Amalgam Comics, but just Marvel.
Yeah.
And this is kind of exploring these characters, and it's... Now, I know when I was talking about Infinity Wars, I said that the whole Warps stuff was very clearly just a cynical way to sell more comics.
Yeah.
I think having read this, I'll walk my position back to say it's very clear that, like, in the Marvel office, someone had an idea for, like, Amalgam Comics but Marvel, and someone else had an idea for, like, a new Infinity Wars to tie in with the movie, and like they just very awkwardly tried to shoehorn them together. Because this, I mean, you could have very easily just done this. Just, like said, hey, do you want to read a comic about where, like, Steve Rogers and Stephen Strange emerged into one person? And, like, you didn't need a whole event just to kind of justify this.
It's comics. You don't need any event. You just do it.
Yeah, but anyway, the comics themselves are, yeah. I enjoyed all of them. I think some of them kind of varied in quality, but even the ones where they weren't necessarily that good, I quite enjoyed seeing, oh, look, they've combined this character with this character, that's fun.
Yeah, I wouldn't have put Stephen Strange and Steve Rogers together, but when I saw Soldier Supreme, I thought, actually, that is a very smart idea.
Yeah, it does, it works really well, because basically, it's World War II. Project Rebirth is going on, but instead of making a super soldier serum, Professor Erskine, who I think is maybe combined with the Ancient One, she basically makes a pact with some kind of otherworldly force to imbue Stephen Rogers with supernatural powers. And there's basically a fun bit where he's testing his powers, because that the main way they manifest is in making like a magical force shield, and you see like a someone tries to shoot it with a gun, then a bazooka, and then a tank, and luckily he survives and goes on to become the Soldier Supreme, who looks like kind of Captain America but like magicy robes and stuff.
Yeah.
And with a big old handlebar mustache as well, which is great. Yes. And he teams up with his good friends Dum Dum Fury and Bucky Wong.
Wow.
To fight the Nazis in World War II.
Do you know why it works for me, though? It's because during World War II, the Nazis were big on their whole magic and mysticism stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It does very much play into this kind of occult Third Reich that you see in stuff like Hellboy.
Yeah.
Also, I just want to point out that there's one super dark bit in this comic, which is ostensibly something that children can read. So it's basically explaining how we get this universe's Winter Soldier. So Stephen and Bucky are sitting in a foxhole, right? Just talking about the war. And they get hit by a mortar. But luckily, you know, Steve's got his magic, so he wakes up kind of just kind of slightly battered, his costume's torn up a bit. And he's alone in a crater that's just red.
Wow.
Because something... Well, basically, it's all gone wrong.
Did you just wait to set that joke up?
I did. It was horrible and it was worth it. But yeah, but it's cool because then, like, basically you get a bit later where Steven's fighting Dormammu Red, with, of course, the Red Skull mixed with Dormammu.
Yeah.
When he suddenly gets stabbed from behind by a bayonet. And he goes, wait, the Winter Soldier? I thought it was just a ghost story. Cue with the ghost of Bucky Wong saying, oh, it is. Because Steve's basically just brought him back as a ghost, which was kind of rad. Anyway, then Steve ends up getting trapped in the Dark Dimension for a few decades, which I like a way of doing the kind of frozen in ice thing.
Yeah.
When he gets brought back by one of the best amalgams, Mordok, who is, mental organism ritually designed for the occult. And basically they're trying to summon Satan, and they accidentally do. Well, they accidentally bring Stephen back instead of the devil. And I just love that one of the cultists says, oh, Satan is a lot more handsome than I would have guessed. And then just one of the guys just, really, Aaron? Satan would want me to have these lustful feelings, Ryan. And that's why Aaron the cultist is my favourite amalgam character. Anyway, that's pretty fun. I think the only thing is it basically just ends with Steve getting called to take part in Infinity Wars. So that's kind of just a bit of a limp ending. But yeah, no, it was good. That was written by Jerry Duggan with art by Adam Kubert. And Adam Kubert does some good, good art. So next up we had Iron Hammer, which was written by Al Ewing with art by Ramon Rosanas. And this one was cool. Basically about Sigurd Stark, the fifth richest man in all of Europe, but also amnesiac Norwegian man.
So is this a combination of Thor and Iron Man then?
Yep. So Sigurd gets captured by Dark Elves and forced to make weapons for them, where he meets Eitri the dwarf, who helps him craft kind of a suit of magic armor and a big old warhammer, but dies in the process. So then Sigurd escapes. We have some more fun with acronyms that I need to find.
Oh?
Yeah, but so Iron Hammer's AI system is the Heuristic Enhanced Imaging Macro Digital Awareness for Logic and Logistics.
And Heuristic?
Heuristic Enhanced Imaging Macro Digital Awareness for Logic and Linguistics.
Heimdall.
Yep. And eventually, Heimdall has a program allows Sigurd to use a bridging interdimensional frequency rotating outside space-time, a.k.a. Bifrost. And that takes him back to Asgard, where he remembers that, oh, wait, he is actually the son of Howard Odin, head of Asgard.
And why they shouldn't have called him Howard Odin. It should have been Howdin.
Oh, no, he is Howard Odin, chief executive of the Aesir. I just love, we get a flashback where it's, by the sacred ring of Asgard, symbol and token of my rule, I, Howard Odin, chieftain executive of the Aesir, do make proclamation that my child Stark Odinson is hereby denied his petition. So yeah, basically like all the Iron Man characters are demigods in Asgard, except, and I'll admit this was a really neat way of actually tying into Infinity War, Stain Odinson, who is basically a human child, saved by Howard Odin and raised in Asgard, and clearly he's supposed to be the Loki analog.
Yeah.
But if you remember to Infinity Wars, Loki didn't get amalgamated. So Stain's whole thing is that he feels like it's some great cosmic injustice that he's not a demigod, like, because he should have been, but because Loki's not part of the thing, he's not. And so they're like, that's turned Stain into this universe's Loki. And I just thought that was a really clever, like, way of mixing things about.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Anyway, he ends up, Iron Hammer ends up defeating Stain and Malekith, who has the 10 rings of the 10 realms, because he's also the Mandarin. And there's quite frankly a spectacular moment.
Don't tell me, I want to read this.
Oh, man. But I kind of want to tell it for the audience.
Go on, then.
Because Howard Odin gets another incredible line.
Go on, then.
Because basically Stain Odinson is yelling about, it's not fair. You know, Stark is a god. But Howard says that no, when he exiled Stark, he took away his godly powers. And Stain says, no, you're lying. To which Howard replies, nay, without that armor, Sigurd Stark is just a man with a man's courage. Nothing but a man. But he can never fail. No one but the pure of heart. Flash. I'm arguing for the Flash Gordon reference in this comic. It's fantastic. Anyway, picking up the pace a bit, because the next two I didn't enjoy as much. Arachnite, which is by Dennis Hopeless and Ale Garza.
Yeah.
That's basically Spider-Man and Moon Knight. It's pretty fun. It's the idea of, like, he's got four personalities now. So, like, one is hardcore vigilante Moon. There's, like, suave businessman Peter Parker. But then there's also, like, funny jokester Arachnite, and, like, science nerd Peter Parker. And he is on the trail of the Goblin by Night, the mysterious monster who killed his Uncle Ben and Aunt May. And yeah, that was pretty fun. My main problem with that was the artwork. Maybe a bit too cartoony.
Yeah.
I just think it doesn't work that well. Weapon Hex by Ben Acker and Ben Blacker, with art by Gerardo Sandoval. That's Weapon X and also Scarlet Witch. And to be honest, that one's just a bit of a mess. So I think it's trying to accomplish too much. It's all like trying to summon magical demons and also like super assassins. I think also suffers from the fact that this is a period where Scarlet Witch isn't Magneto's daughter anymore, so it's kind of unclear what her origin is.
Yeah.
So it's basically just Magic X-23. And also Gerardo Sandoval. Gerardo Sandoval is an artist who I kind of... he's a bit hit and miss for me, and this is just a bit too sort of wannabe manga-esque, you know?
Yeah, I know.
I can see a lot in the kind of 90s, but I've seen like one episode of Neon Genesis Evangelion, so all my characters are going to have eyes the size of half their face.
The eyes are bigger than the belly.
Yep. It does have one redeeming grace, though. Because obviously, if Laura Kinney is merged with Scarlet Witch, then Gabby is merged with Quicksilver. And do you know what her code name is? Speed Weasel.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, yeah, that story is entirely worth it just for Speed Weasel.
Yes.
And then finally, we have Ghost Panther issues 1 and 2, written by Jed McKay with art by Hefte Paolo. This one's rad. Basically, it's a world where T'Challa gets exiled from Wakanda and so becomes a motorbike stunt guy by the name of Johnny Blaze. But then he dies in an accident and gets resurrected by Zarathos, the, like, demonic panther sister of Bast. who is rad because she's just like a woman made of marble wearing these like long flowing dresses with a flaming panther skull for her head.
Awesome.
And yeah. Also, really random is another thing that he gets tied into. Because he fights a Killmonger analog, who's Eric Killraven.
What, the Hunter?
No, Killraven, the like weird, obscure Marvel character who grew up in the future and fought the Martians.
Oh, him! Sorry, he said it had Raven and a K, so obviously I thought Craven.
Yeah, fair enough, but like, it's Ghost Rider Black Panther fighting a man who has come from the future and fought the Martians. Also, I need more Ghost Panther, because it gave me a dirty tease that it didn't fulfill on. Because T'Challa's sister is Shuriri, who has invented the Panther Heart Armor. But we never get to see the Panther Heart Armor.
I was thinking Shuriri. Riri! Riri! Shuri! Riri! Wah!
Yeah, like, I want my Ironheart Black Panther.
Yes.
Anyway, then finally we get a couple of Infinity Warps issues where they're just sort of much shorter stories. So the first issue, in a bit written by Jim Zub with art by Flaviano, it's narrated by Observer X, who is the Watcher combined with Professor X, and speaks entirely in X puns. Like, the first lines are, "I am Observer X, until time itself expires, and Alpha Observers and I..." Yeah, the Alpha Observers and I will watch every expansive exploit that divines this. But like, it's even sort of chaotic, it's just X-otic existence. And yes, all the X-words are like X-hyphen, rest of the word. That's great. So what we get in this issue, The Terrific Two, written by Jim Zub, with art by Todd Nowak, Oscar Yildrim, and Scott Hanna. And that is... I can't remember like specifically how they got combined. Yeah. Ben and Reed Storm, twin brothers who went into space and got powers. Now they are Mr. Invisible and Hot Rocks.
See, I hate to say it, but they sound like a male stripper duo.
I mean, it doesn't help that Ben talks entirely in rock-based puns. Like, because they fight Master Mole and his centenoid slaves. And Ben just yells out, "Burst my basalt, look at that guy! Galloping granite, there's more of them!" It's very silly and I love it. But it's not as silly as Ryan North and Natasha Bustos's Moon Squirrel and Tippy Saw.
Go on.
It's great because it's about... how do they specifically explain it? Yeah. Lunine Laffergreen is the smartest kid on Earth and the youngest ever computer science student at Empire State University. But that doesn't stop other kids from making fun of her and calling her Moon Girl. One night outside the computer lab, she was visited by a friendly Eurasian red squirrel, who was suddenly exposed to the mysterious Terrigen Mists and grew to the size of a T-Rex. Lunine put her genius to mind towards inventing a squirrel translation machine, and now she and Tippy Saw work together protecting Earth from the threats within and without as Moon Squirrel and Tippy Saw.
Nice.
They fight Dr. Doomactus. Do you know how they defeat him?
They cover him in giant squirrels.
No. They reprogram the squirrel translation device and stick it on his head so that he hears the screams of terror from the populace as being just praising Doom.
Wow.
Because Doomactus will either eat a planet or convert its populace to Doombots so that they can forever sing his praises. But now in his travels to planets, he hears everyone screaming out how great Doctor Doom is and just leaves again.
Yeah, that works for me.
And then finally in this one, we had Green Widow, which was written by Mariko Tamaki and Francisco Herrera. I didn't like the art, but I really liked the idea because Green Widow is a Black Widow and She-Hulk.
Yeah.
But she also does spy missions with her overly chatty partner, Cat Eye, who is Hellcat crossed with Hawkeye.
That's amazing.
And like, I really want some more like buddy cop adventures with those two.
Yes.
Anyway, just finally, in the second issue, I'll just skim over these ones because basically the fun stuff is their names.
Yeah.
we had the narrator, Forever Bushman, who is Four Bushman crossed with Eternity. But Kamala Kang and Diamond Patch,
yeah,
who both appeared in the main event. And just the most, actually, I'll just say, Forever Bushman, that's written by Jim Zub with art by Scott Koblish. Kamala Kang, written by Chris Hastings with art by Kev Walker. Diamond Patch is written by Cena Grace with art by Chris Sprouse. Finally, written by Cullen Bunn and with art by Gary Brown. The Punisher Pack. It's Power Pack crossed with the Punisher.
I was about to say, is that Power Pack crossed with Punisher?
They're so dark, but they're so adorably childish.
I need to read this.
Yeah, I think you do. Like, this is just... Like, I didn't need Infinity Wars. Just give me this Marvel, and then give me some more of this.
Yeah, that...
Because it's very fun.
That's my point. You don't need a main event. You don't need anything like that. Just do the interesting stuff. Remember DC used to do their Elseworlds stuff? Where they just took a bunch of ideas and, you know, they don't work in the main series, let's pop them in Elseworlds.
Yeah, but this is just good Elseworlds stuff.
Yeah, that's what Marvel need to do more of.
Anyway, Rob, I want to do a quick little bit of your last thing.
Yes, well, this is going to be quick. So, this is actually Eden's Zero, Volume 2 by Hiro Mishima. If you recall back on whatever episode it was, I can't remember, but just Google it, you'll find it. Four-part little Eden Zero. You'll find which episode it was on. I covered Volume 1, and I made the comment that this is basically fairy tale in space, but in Volume 2, it's actually started deviating a little bit from what I thought it was going to be. And the reason for that is that there are ideas in here that I didn't think would actually fit into Hiro Mishima's head. Good, solid sci-fi ideas, in fact.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, yeah. Fan service-y stuff is still in there, but it's toned down a little bit in this volume. So you have your...
Well, his hand is probably starting to cramp.
Yeah. So you have Shiki, who is the boy who controls gravity, and Rebecca, who is basically the Lucy-type character, and Happy, who is the robot cat. And they've gone to the planet Norma with the hopes of getting a bigger ship from an old friend, Professor Wise. The only problem is... They quickly realise that the Norma that they've landed on is actually the planet Norma from 50 years ago. It's not the planet Norma that Rebecca left. It's somehow gone backwards in time. And they don't know how. Eventually, they escape from planet Norma with the help of the young Weiss from 50 years previously and with the help of another small robot. Her name is E.M. Pino or something like that. Or E.M. Peon.
No, all right, too late. I've decided her name is E.M. Pino Noir. And yes, it is said exactly like Titus Andromedon singing it at the time.
Exactly. But anyway, they have to fight this criminal gang called Sibir, who is after the young Dr. Wise because he thought he'd stolen a case full of money, but he didn't. He actually stole a case that had E.M. Peon in, who is a little female robot who basically emits electromagnetic pulses. So, big fight, yada, yada, yada. They try and escape. The police are after them. They hand over their ship to the young Dr. Wise, who learns from the old Dr. Wise, who's already escaped the planet, that there is no effect on the timeline because what's actually happened is the planet Norma is under attack from what's known as a chronophage, a cosmic entity that eats the time of a planet.
Hey, this is some wacky, fun sci-fi stuff.
Exactly. And I thought... You know, when it introduced the chronophage, I'm like, ooh, that's actually quite a good idea. I like that. A cosmic entity that eats the time of planets.
That's like proper Silver Age Superman stuff.
Exactly. And then things move on, and Elsie Crimson turns up, who is basically the Urza Scarlet type character. She turns up on her giant ship, but the ship turns out to be not quite what they expect, and somehow she knows Shiki. You learn more about the relationship between her and Shiki, how she knows him, everything like that. And you also get an idea of just how powerful a space pirate she is. So, yeah. It's progressing in a way I didn't expect. Okay, the art style is exactly what you'd expect from Hiro Mishima. If you've read Fairy Tail or any of his other stuff, then you know exactly what you're getting in terms of the art style. In terms of the story... It's unusual. It's very, very different to what I imagined and to a sci-fi junkie like me. weirdly enough, kind of like it now. I wasn't too sure after the first volume, but it's grown on me a little bit. We'll see. I'm still reserving judgment until I've read more. It's only two volumes in. Plenty of time for him to mess it up.
Yeah, God, I'm vaguely intrigued by a Hiro Mishima manga.
I know.
I feel dirty.
It's bizarre, isn't it? So, yeah.
Anyway, I need to go scrub myself clean, so I guess that's the end of the show.
Yes, it is. So, if you want to catch up
Actually, you know what? I probably shouldn't be speaking about Impure Thoughts and Hiro Mishima manga in the same sentence.
Yes.
Those two go together far too well. That's my main issue with him.
Yes. Yes, they do.
Rob, stop the show. I'm getting dangerously close to saying bad things that can't be taken back.
Yes, that's what I was trying to do before you interrupted me. Anyway, if you want to listen to this or any of our other shows, then you can find us on Audioboom, Apple Podcasts, or whichever podcast provider that you choose to use. We're also on YouTube as well. And if you are listening on anything, then, you know, leave us a rating, leave us a review, leave us a comment. Let us know what you think.
Yeah, maybe let us know what you want to see in Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Yeah, exactly. So, that's it from us. Until next time, I've been Rob.
And I've been Andrew.
And we will see you all later.
Thanks for listening.